stand-up historian. Those who tell stories rule society.
Hello and welcome to Stand Up Historian. My name is Kurosh and I bring this podcast to you from beautiful Seattle, Washington. Today I am going to discuss another episode in which I talk about esoteric movement philosophies and intellectuals who gave way to the rise of Third Reich in Germany. I had a few episodes prior to this which we talked about occultism in Third Reich, and especially in one episode I talked about Maria Orsic and I told you her story. In this episode I want to specifically focus on the history of Ariosophy and review this movement and see how it influenced Hitler and consequently the Third Reich and Germany until the fall of Nazis in 1945. Before I start this edition, I invite you to visit my website at standuphistorian.com. Once there, you can look at all the writings I have. You can listen to previous podcasts, or if you wish to contact me, you'll be able to send me a message from my website. Thank you very much for listening, and I hope you enjoy this episode. We cannot understand the history of the Third Reich and the environment in which it formed without making a special mention of the intellectual and esoteric movements predating the rise of Nazism in Germany. Many of the philosophical ideas which took root in Germany during the 19th century and after were centered around the idea of Völkisch movement. Völkisch movement was a Germanic populist movement which basically centered on the romanticized folklore and cultural values of Germanic people. This movement started in Austria as a counter-revolutionary ideology opposed to the liberal and democratic ideologies popularized during the Enlightenment era. To understand the intellectual atmosphere in which the ideas of Nazism and Arianism arose, first, we must make a special mention of the founders of an esoteric and spiritual movement known as Ariosophy, which was forged in the fire of the Germanic Völkisch movement. Respectively, these founders were Guido von Liszt, Jörg Lanz von Liebenfels, and Karl Maria Wilgut. The term Ariosophy itself, meaning wisdom of the Aryans. To describe the Germanic esoteric and occult revival was actually coined by Liebenfels in retrospect and was not generally current among the esoterics themselves. Liszt actually called his doctrine Arianism, while Lanz used the term Theozoology and Arian-Christianity before the First World War. Guido von Liszt promoted the idea of racial religion premised on the concept of renouncing the imposed foreign creed of Judeo-Christianity and returning to the pagan religions of the ancient Aryans. This happened in history before, interestingly, in Roman Empire, after the great conversion of Roman Empire to Christianity, Emperor Julian, for the first time, he tried to take Rome and Romans back to paganism. He tried very hard. He promoted paganism. He made sacrifices to the Greco-Roman gods and goddesses. And finally, in his famous invasion of Persia, when he returned, he was killed and it was not successful. So what we see here is this movement in Germany is a similar movement, returning to paganism. List called his doctrine Arminism, after the Arminian, a romanticized body of priest kings supposed by von List to have existed in the ancient Aryo-Germanic nation. He believed that his German name had been Latinized into the tribal name Hermionis, mentioned in Tacitus, and that it actually meant the heirs of the Sun King, a bloodline of individuals who were organized into a priesthood called the Arminian Schaft. His concept of the original Germanic religion was a form of sun worship, Mithraism. You have to go back and study these things in ancient Persia and the influence of that in Rome and consequently Germanic nations. His concept of original Germanic religion was a form of sun worship, with its priest kings as the legendary rulers of ancient Germany. This is very close to what you see in Persian empires prior to invasion of Islam and destruction of a Persian empire in hands of Muslims. They call the king the same thing, king priest. And that shows how influential the religion was. The king was also the highest priest of the land at the same time. And when List is talking about king priests, he is in fact referencing the same thing that was in ancient Persia, which also considered to be Aryans. Religious instruction was imparted on two levels, one for a priesthood of initiates and another for the laymen. And the esoteric doctrine of Arminism was concerned with the secret mysteries of gnosis, or knowledge, reserved for the initiated elites, while the exoteric doctrine, Wotanism, after the name god Wotan, took the form of popular folkish myths intended for the loyal intellectual and social classes. I have to add to this that you see, when List is talking about his Arminism, he's talking about two different classes of people. There is always elites and then the rest. So there is a special secret knowledge which is only available to the elites, and there is other knowledge, lower knowledge, less important for the rest of us. List also believed that the ancient Germanic traditions and myths were preserved under the veneer of Christianity, such as the parallels of Yule and Christmas. And he sought to decode these traditions back into their true pagan form. So you see, he went through so much trouble to draw similarities and find out aspects of Christianity that he believed are inherited from Germanic pagan rituals and Germanic pagan stories, such as Yule and Christmas. List also believed in the magical powers of the ancient Germanic runes and came up with a system of runes called Arminian runes, which he claimed came to him in a vision during a bout with temporary blindness. Temporary blindness and receiving this kind of visions is not new or specifically for Liszt. The most famous blindness and vision that we have heard probably is Paul in the Bible, right? On his way to Syria to prosecute Christians, he has the vision of Christ. Anyways, from 1891 onwards, Liszt claimed that heraldry was based on a system of encoded runes, so that heraldic devices conveyed a secret heritage in cryptic form. This connection with the runes became the cornerstone of his philosophy. So here we're talking about von Liszt and how he came up with his philosophy. He put together his philosophy, and he, on the foundation of Germanic folkish stories, built his philosophy and added some esoteric layers and levels to that. And he culminated as his final masterpiece in 1914, the so-called proto-language of the Aryo-Germanics and their mystery language, which was a comprehensive explanation of his linguistic and historical theories. So we can see that Liszt created the whole package, the language, the religion, mythology, and everything he needed to offer it to a nation. And if they accept it, it will give them a new identity, which is not new. In his philosophy, in his view, it will take those people back to their true, so-called true roots. Liszt's doctrine has been described as deist, pantheist, and most importantly, Gnostic. The basis of his philosophy is the mystical union of the transcendent God, man, and nature. Wotanism teaches that God dwells within the individual human spirit, but is also immanent within nature through the primal laws which govern the cycles of birth, growth, aging, decay, renewal, rebirth, laws of nature, and so on and so forth. Liszt rejected the dualism of spirit versus matter or of God over nature, and saw humanity as one with the universe. This indicated a human obligation to live in accordance with nature and natural laws, such as hierarchy. So he sees the hierarchy as a natural law, and humanity is one with universe. Therefore, humanity needs to obey the natural laws, including hierarchy. Yet, unlike many Gnostic doctrines, Liszt did not believe that it was the destiny of the individual human ego to merge with the cosmos or God. To Liszt, the ego was immortal and would pass through successive reincarnations until it overcome all obstacles to its divine purpose. And if you're familiar with Indian and more specifically Hinduism, you will see this idea almost precisely over there. Liszt foresaw a future utopia on Earth that would eventually arise as a consequence of this cycle of reincarnation and spiritual evolution, which he identified with the Germanic legend of Valhalla, the promised afterlife of heroes. So the circle of rebirth and reincarnation until perfection was the foundation of his philosophy. There's an old story. One of the Persian kings, Persian emperors, they never called themselves emperor, was always king, sends an envoy and asks him to go out and find out the borders and the ends of my territory. And this convoy travels eastward and goes through India and all the way to parts of China, and wherever he goes, people and everybody there, when he asks them, they reply that they are subjects of the Persian king. in his adventures and in his going from place to another place, he meets different people with knowledge, wisdom, and proud people that have been living under the Persian Empire. In one of his encounters, he meets this Hindu and asks him, he gets involved in some kind of esoteric philosophical conversations and asks him, what's the purpose of life? And this fakir Hindu, he's holding a yarn. So he throws the yarn rolls, and part of the string, in fact, unravels. And he says, this is one life. You are this yarn, all clogged up, and you can't find the head or tail of this. Every time you are born, one part gets unraveled, unfolded, until this whole yarn is unfolded, unraveled, and it's just one straight line. You have to return to the world. So he answered both questions. What's the reason? Because you have to become perfect. Does reincarnation happen? Yes, it happens, because with just one lifetime, you cannot become perfect. Anyway, I thought I should tell you this story. And you can see that von Liszt had a lot of studies of Eastern Aryan philosophies. In 1908, the Wanik family, which were close friends of Liszt, founded the Guido von Liszt Gesellschaft, or Guido von Liszt Society. This society was founded primarily as a folkish occult organization, which the purpose of financing and publishing Liszt's research was its sole purpose. The Liszt Society was supported by many prominent people in Austria and Germany. Liszt used the society as a platform to organize and establish esoteric and exoteric circles in his organization. The High Armanen Order, Hoher Armanen Orden, or HAO, was established as the inner circle of Guido von Liszt Society. Founded in midsummer 1911, it was set up as a magical order or lodge to support Liszt's deeper and more mystical work. The HAO participated in pilgrimages to what Liszt and its members believed to be holy Armanic sites, such as Carnuntum, Stephansdom in Vienna, etc. They also had occasional meetings between 1911 and 1918, but the exact nature of these remains unknown. We don't know what they were discussing in those meetings. Liszt and the HAO remained a great influence on Germanic esoterics for many years, which brings us to the other founding father of Aryosophy, and the man who coined the term now associated with the esoteric movement, Jörg Lanz von Liebenfels, was a Viennese ex-Cistercian monk, Bible scholar, and inventor. In 1903, he published an article under the Latin title of Anthroposun Biblicum, the biblical man-animal, in a journal for biblical studies edited by Moritz Altschuler, an admirer of Guido von Liszt. In his article, Lanz conducted a comparative study of Near Eastern cultures, in which detected what he believed to be evidence from iconography and literature which seemed to point to the continued survival into early historical times of hominid ape men similar to Homo erectus. Furthermore, he systematically analyzed the Old Testament in the light of his hypothesis, identifying and interpreting what he believed to be coded references to the primitive ape man, which seemed to describe an illicit practice of interbreeding between humans and lower species in antiquity. So that was his interpretation. After studying, he was a scholar of the Bible. After studying Old Testament, he interpreted and he decoded, and he believed that, yes, there was this kind of interbreeding practices. But in 1905, he expanded upon his research and formulated a complex doctrine titled Theozoology, or the science of the sodomite ape lynx and the divine electron. Yeah, it's a mouthful for a title. Within this work, he claimed that Aryan race originated from a race of interstellar gods termed Theozoa, while lower races were a result of interbreeding between Aryan humans and apemen, or Anthropozoa. The effects of misogyny with the lower races caused paranormal powers inherited from the original gods to atrophy, but that these powers could be restored to our race by the selective breeding of pure Aryan lineages. So right here, you see the idea of race. He offers this theory that initially Aryans are children of God, far from any blemishes, any humanly impurities, but they made out with another race, lower race, and that's why their special forces, their God-man qualities deteriorated. But he says we can go back and make sure we breed pure Aryans, and eventually we will gain those powers once again. So right here, you can see why Germans and Nazis insisted so much on Aryanism and making sure that they have pure men and male and female Aryans. There are so many stories about how important it was for them to make sure the couple are purely Aryans. And now you see the reason, because they could bring back the race of gods. In the same year that he published the doctrine of Theozoology, Lanz began publishing a periodical entitled Ostara to promote his vision of racial purity. In later years, it is suspected that Hitler was an avid reader of Ostara, which promoted many ideas which were paralleled in Hitler's philosophy of race. So obviously, when Lanz publishes Ostara and Hitler reads them, it's very obvious that he wants to create this pure race. On December 25, 1907, Lanz founded the Ordo Novi Templi, Order of the New Templars, or ONT, a mystical society with its headquarters at Bergwerfenstein Castle in Upper Austria, overlooking the Danube River. The declared goal of the ONT was to unify science, art, and religion within a framework of racial consciousness. Rituals were designed in accordance with their conception of Aryan aesthetics, and to express the order's theological system, which Lanz called Aryo-Christianity. The order was the first to use the swastika with a specifically Aryan connotation. A red swastika was displayed on the flag of ONT facing right, clockwise, on a yellow-orange field and surrounded by four blue fleurs de lis above, below, to the right, and to the left. Both the High Armenian Order and the Ordo Novi Templi survived for a time, but was suppressed by the National Socialists in favor of a state-sanctioned inner circle of Aryosophy. So in fact, both Armen and Order and Ordo Novi Templi, they were designed for the entire society of Germanic people. But again, once Nazis control the power, they decide and they create this state-sanctioned religion. And they just absorb some of the inner circle members of Ariosophy. This new inner circle was for a time headed up by military veteran and highly eccentric Karl Maria Wolgott, under auspices of Heinrich Himmler. And I believe we talked about Heinrich Himmler and his extreme attraction for and attention to esoteric subjects. This choice in leadership would later prove to have been a mistake, leading to the decline of Ariosophy in the Third Reich. Wolgott was born the 10th of December 1866 in Vienna, Austria. At the age of 14, he joined Austrian military and became a career soldier. In 1889, Wolgott joined the Schlaraffia, a quasi-Masonic lodge, and within 10 years held the rank of knight and the office of chancellor. He published his first book, a collection of poems, Seyfried's Runes, in 1903. Under his full real name and with additional pseudonyms such as Lobesum. In 1908, he published Neun Gebote Gottes, Nine Commandments of the Gods, where Wolgott first claimed to be heir to an ancient tradition he called Irmanism. So far, when we talk about these three characters, three founders of Ariosophy, you see that they all claim to be heirs of some ancient order, some ancient tradition, including Wolgott. He also claimed to have spiritual powers that allowed him direct access to genetic memories of his ancestors thousands of years before. From 1908, Wolgott was in contact with the occultist Theodor Chappelle from the Ordo Novi Templi in Vienna. Wolgott claimed that the Bible had originally been written in Germanic. Well, and testified to an Irmenic religion, Irmenian religion or Irmenism, that contrasted with Wotanism. He claimed to worship a Germanic god, Christ, whom Christianity was supposed later to have appropriated as their own savior, Christ. So once you start building up these ideas in your head, there is nothing to stop you and there is no red lines. You just keep going and adding to the most strangest ideas that you have come up with. And here you see that Wolgott actually said the Bible was written in a Germanic language. Wolgott also described that in the 12,500 BC, the Irmenic religion of Christ was revealed and from that time became the religion of Germanic peoples. Until the schismatic adherents of Wotanism gained the upper hand. In 1200 BC, the Wotanists succeeded in destroying the Irmenic religious center at Goslar, following which the Irmenists erected a new temple at Extrenstein, which was in turn appropriated by the Wotanists in AD 460. Wolgott's own ancestors were supposedly protagonists in these settings. The Wolgottists were ice kings descending from a union of Aesir and Vanir from Nordic mythology. They founded the city of Vilna as the center of their Germanic empire and always remained true to their Irmenic faith. So Wolgott created this genealogy, created this roots for himself. After nearly 40 years of service in the Austrian military, Will got retired as a colonel in 1919 with an impeccable record and moved to Morsk near Salzburg, where he dedicated his time to occult studies. He renewed his acquaintance with Theodor Chappelle of the Ordo Novi Templi, who in the winter of 1920-21 spent 7 weeks in Wilgot's house. Chappelle compiled a report for the archive of the Ordo Novi Templi, where he describes Wilgot as a man martial in aspects who revealed himself as bearer of a secret line of German kingship. Though others seemed impressed by his claim to kingship, Wilgot's wife was unimpressed and pushed for his committal to a mental hospital. Wilgot was eventually arrested by police and taken to the local mental institution, where he was held for a couple of years. Wilgot's medical records reflected domestic violence, including threats of matricide, grandiose projects, eccentric behavior, and so on and so forth. In 1924, he was diagnosed with schizophrenia and megalomania and was declared legally incompetent by a Salzburg court and then committed to a Salzburg asylum, where he remained until 1927. After his release, he returned to his family, but in 1932, he abandoned his wife and family and emigrated to Munich, Germany. He's known to have corresponded with many admirers and disciples, as well as members of the Order of the New Templars. In September 1933, at a conference of the Nordisch Society, Wilgot was introduced to Reichsführer of SS Heinrich Himmler, who was a great occult enthusiast, and we talked about him, and a student of Eastern mysticism. Shortly thereafter, and probably due to his military service in Austria, Wilgot was inducted into the SS under the pseudonym Karl Maria Weisthor to head a department for pre and early history, which was created for him within the SS Race and Settlement main office. So a certifiable insane man becomes a major player at SS. Then in April 1934, he was promoted to the SS equivalent of his old colonel rank, and then made head of Section 8 archives of SS in October 1934. Then again in November 1934, a promotion followed to the rank of Oberführer, which is equal to Lieutenant Brigadier. And then in the spring of 1935, Wilgot was transferred to Berlin to serve on Himmler's personal staff. He was promoted to the rank of Brigadier Führer in September 1936. In Berlin, he worked to develop his plans for the rebuilding Wewelsburg Castle into an allegorical center of the world. During the next few years, Wewelsburg Castle became the spiritual and esoteric center for the inner circle of German SS. Many rituals took place there, and a new Round Table of Knights, a copy of King Arthur's Round Table, within the SS continually met to discuss and plan the transition of Germany from a Judeo-Christian society to embracing a culture based on the pagan Gnostic values of Arianism and Ariosophy. Though in November 1938, Karl Wolf, chief adjutant of Himmler's personal staff and the second highest ranking officer in the SS, visited Wilgot's wife and learned of Vilgot's earlier involuntary commitment to a mental institution, this proved to be an embarrassment to Hitler, and Vilgot was forced into official retirement on August 28, 1939. And this is hard to believe, that for a system like Nazis, which archives and information and research was extremely important, they did not find out his background until 1939. The esoteric practices of the SS and Himmler's inner circle continued for the duration of the war, and eventually the National Socialists came into conflict with Order of New Templars. Though they had pioneered many ideas which the National Socialists later adopted, the Order of New Templars was suppressed by the Gestapo in 1942. By this time, it had established communities throughout Austria, Germany, and Hungary. While suspending its activities in the Greater German Reich, the Order of New Templars survived in Hungary until around the end of World War II. It went underground in Vienna after 1945. But in 1958, Order of New Templars was contacted by a former Waffen-SS Lieutenant Rudolf Mundt, who became prior of the order in 1979. Mundt also wrote biographies of Lanz and Vilgot. One of the reasons I talk about this subject and I dig deep in history of Reich, they believe the esoteric beliefs, they believe in magical forces, they believe in existence of some pagan traditions in the past, and their belief in superior and inferior races is that because we see that today. What we know as eugenics, in fact, it has its roots to such beliefs as I mentioned here. In future episodes and editions, I am hoping to continue and bring this movement to much closer time to ours and even days that we live. And if we can remove the curtains and have a look behind the curtains and see what happened after World War II and how these ideas survived until our time, and perhaps some very prominent figures of our time are continuing to push for these ideas and to bring about a new world order that they failed to bring during the Second World War. Thank you very much for listening. I understand that these topics sometimes could be cumbersome to follow or boresome. And I'm trying to add some spice to it, but tell you some stories. But hang in there with me. We get to very exciting parts of this research, and I hope you continue to listening. Thank you very much, and God bless.